I grow too old to dream. I'll have you to remember.
That voice, a subtle balance of grace and rhythmic daring, belongs to one of the most popular singers of our time, Nat King Cole. His individual sound developed during his more than two decades as an influential jazz pianist and leader of his own trio. And his unparalleled success as a vocalist gave him the chance to break ground for other black entertainers. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is Jazz Profiles. On this show, the second of two parts, we pay tribute to Nat King Cole, the jazz singer and artist.
I'll give you three clues, and then you tell me who you think this is. A, Billboard magazine says they're the top trio in America. B, you'll find their records on every jukebox in the country. And C, I leave you with two words, Nature Boy. Okay? Well, that's right, and here they are.
There was a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far over land and sea.
By 1948, Nat King Cole was a star. That year, his song, Nature Boy, was number one on the Billboard pop charts. This was no overnight success. It was the product of many years of creative growth, working primarily with his Nat King Cole trio. The trio set the standard for the small group jazz sound from the late 30s throughout the 40s. But the personnel of the trio was changing. The guitarist, Oscar Moore, left the group in 1947 and was replaced by the equally talented Irving Ashby. Bassist Joe Comfort took Johnny Miller's place the next year. By then, Nat Cole was trying to find new ways to expand upon the basic combination of piano, guitar, and bass. When he added the bongo player, Jack Constanzo, to the trio, the result was an even stronger emphasis on the rhythmic pulse in the music. Here's Nat King Cole plus trio in 1949.
Yes, sir, that's my baby. No, sir, don't mean maybe. Yes, sir, that's my baby now. Yes, ma'am, we've decided. No, ma'am, we won't hide it. Yes, ma'am, you're invited now. By the way, when we reach that preacher, I'll say with feeling, yes, sir, that's my baby. No, sir, don't mean maybe. Yes, sir, that's my baby now.
Nat King Cole and his trio with Yes, Sir, That's My Baby. With stardom achieved, Nat had access to the best arrangers. He worked with a number of them to create distinctive backgrounds for his increasingly popular voice. The arranger Pete Rugolo worked for many years with the Stan Kenton Orchestra and was one of the first to work with Nat Cole.
He liked a good jazz band in those days, and most of the stuff we recorded had a jazz feeling. He loved the bands of naturally Duke Ellington and Count Basie and an old band called Jimmy Lunsford, and I knew what he liked. Of course, he liked Stan's band, too. And so in the instrumental side, whenever I had a chance for a band, I would do that kind of arranging, and he loved it. He just loved everything.
I jump up at dawn, shake out the sun, laugh like a loon, everything is fun, it's crazy, but I'm in love. I act like a fool, what do I care? I'll be a fool as long as you're there. It's crazy, but I'm in love.
One of the more unusual numbers that Pete Rugolo arranged for Nat King Cole and his trio was the Billy Strayhorn tune, Lush Life.
he had no idea what I was going to do with it. I didn't either. It was such a strange tune. I kind of made a tone poem out of it. You know, I added bars and I changed everything around. Nobody knew what to do with the tune for a while. I don't think Capitol, when they first heard it, they said, well, this is so different from that. I don't know if it's going to sell. And they didn't release it for about a year. And finally, they put it on as a B-side to a song called I Think I'd Like to Make a Million for Lillian or something like that. And the jockeys started to play it for some reason. It caught on. And I know I was at MGM in those days, and Lana Turner and Ava Gardner, all the girls just loved that piece. It became a cult, more or less, piece.
I used to visit all the very gay places, those come-what-may places, where one relaxes on the axis of the wheel of life to get the feel of life from jazz and cocktails. The girls I knew had sad and sullen gray faces with distant gay traces that used to be there. You could see where they'd been washed away by too many through the day 12 o'clock tales. Then you came along with your siren of song to tempt me to madness. I thought for a while that your poignant smile was tinged with the sadness of a great love for me. Ah, yes, I was
wrong. Lush Life. Nat King Cole and his trio, with orchestra conducted by Pete Rugolo in a 1949 recording. One of several hit songs from that period, featuring strings and woodwinds backing the trio.
Life is lonely again, and only last year everything seemed so sure. Now life is awful again, a trough full of hearts could only be a bore. A week in Paris will ease the bite of it. All I care is to smile in spite of it.
Writer Will Friedman.
As the King Cole Trio was becoming more and more popular, he and Capitol Records gradually kept deciding to expand the canvas in which they worked. And it was never, as some people have said, it was never Capitol like forcing him to use strings or whatever. In fact, he really had to twist the arm of his producers in order to use a string background when he thought it was appropriate.
And he was right. Nat's trio had recorded a holiday number without much success. But a string arrangement turned out to be just the thing for one of Cole's most enduring hits, the Christmas songs. It was written by Robert Wells and Mel Torme.
First of all, we were great friends with Nat by that time. And the minute we finished it, we looked at each other and said, Nat. And the rest is certainly some kind of musical history. There have been well over 500 recorded versions of that song, but nobody ever sang it like Nat. I mean, he owns that song.
They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeers really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
I was in the studio when Nat recorded the Christmas song. I cried all the way through.
Nat King Cole's sister Evelyn, remembering the trio's August 1946 recording session for the Christmas song, featuring a string arrangement by Charlie Grion. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is Jazz Profiles, a tribute to Nat King Cole.
Cuckoo singing his heart out, Robin raising a din. What is so rare as June in the air? Summer is coming in.
Nat never thought he was a singer. I talked one day and I said, oh, Nat, you can really sing. He said, oh, babe. He said, I can't sing. I said, well, the people think you can. He said, the people are crazy. But he never thought he could sing.
Evelyn Coles and singer Mel Torme.
I think that Nat was a true jazz-influenced singer. And I also think that he regretfully and reticently began letting go of the trio image because he loved it so much, and it was successful for him in his early days. But obviously, I suppose financially, economically, it made better sense for him to go out and play the big major Las Vegas clubs, etc., and places like the Shea Paree in Chicago as a solo artist.
He sang as the average individual would like to sing.
Nat's guitarist, John Collins.
And he had a certain quality about his voice. It was a plaintiveness or something. I don't know what it is. But as long as I worked with Nat, I never got tired of hearing Nat sing.
Stars shining right above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in sycamore tree. Dream a little dream of me.
It's Nat Cole, the vocalist, that most listeners are familiar with. When we hear the smooth singing on some of his biggest hits, it's important to remember that Nat Cole's vocal style grew out of his experience as an accomplished musician working in the jazz tradition.
Stars fading, but I linger on, dear, still craving your kiss. I'm longing to linger till dawn, dear, just saying this. Sweet dreams till sunbeams find you. Sweet dreams that leave all worries behind you. But in your dreams, whatever they be, dream a little dream of me.
Pianist Billy Taylor.
The musicality that formerly he poured into both playing and singing, he ultimately just used in terms of his musicality as a singer. And so that gave him something that few other singers had. I mean, he had a rhythmic concept, he had a melodic concept, and he didn't use his melodic concept in the way that Sarah Vaughan or Conor McRae to take liberties with the melody. But he knew those melodies, and the way he approached the actual notes of the melody were pretty much the way he arranged his trio things in the early days.
Nat's rhythmic talent as a singer, he owed very much to his piano playing. I think that the fact that he was able to fall behind the beat and get in front of the beat so comfortably and easily was because he was a great, great jazz pianist.
This can't be love, because I feel so well. No sobs, no sorrows, no sighs. This can't be love, I get no dizzy spell. My head is not in the skies.
Nat King Cole, piano and vocals, with his trio and orchestra. This Can't Be Love, in an arrangement by Nelson Riddle.
I love you for sentimental reasons. I hope you do believe me.
I'll give you my heart.
There's a kind of logical connection between Nat Cole, the musical innovator, the great jazz pianist, and Nat Cole, the rhythmic song stylist. But his enormous achievement as an interpreter of ballads, where did that come from? What made Nat King Cole a master of the American popular song? Mel Torme and Nat's daughter, Natalie Cole.
First of all, I think he's a very romantic singer, and I think that he appreciated lyrics enormously. I know that we, on occasion, talked about not the art of singing necessarily, but just singing in general, and that he, like myself, and I think like Frank Sinatra, for instance, realized very early on that lyrics, the lyrical content of a song, is almost certainly, I don't know, 90 to 95% of what a song is all about. If the melody is lovely, great, that's the frosting. But the cake is the lyric. And Nat paid extraordinarily attention to the lyrics.
Keep it simple. I think that was probably a lot of his appeal was that he didn't do a lot of, you know, acrobatic stuff with his voice. He just sang the song. And he let the ear of his audience interpret it. The song was always the star for him. He never wanted the voice to be the star, which is what people ended up falling in love with, was the voice.
Nat's version of Stardust really reinvigorated my interest in Stardust. I sing Stardust every night now, every single night, and it's because of Nat Cole's record, particularly the way he sang the verse. The verse to Stardust is almost a song in and of itself. It's so beautiful. He sang it and he owned it.
And now the purple dusk of twilight time steals across the meadows of my heart. High up in the sky, the little stars climb, always reminding me that we're apart. You wander down the lane and far away, leaving me a song that will not die. Love is now the stardust of yesterday, the music of the years gone by.
The Hoagy Carmichael Mitchell Parish classic, Stardust. Nat King Cole recorded that Gordon Jenkins arrangement in 1956.
The lonely night, dreaming of a song, the melody haunts my reverie, and I am once again with you when our love was new. And each kiss an inspiration. But that was long ago. Now my consolation is in the stardust of a song beside a garden wall when stars are bright. You are in my arms, the nightingale.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Sands Hotel takes pleasure in presenting Mr. Nat King Cole.
Ballerina, dance, do your pirouette in rhythm with your aching heart.
Nat King Cole was a groundbreaker. As his successes grew, he was in a position to open doors for other black entertainers, and he did. But along the way, he came face to face with the racism prevalent in the entertainment industry, especially in that show business mecca, Las Vegas.
Las Vegas depended largely upon non-white talent to make the bucks necessary.
Pianist and singer Bobby Short.
When I was there, Lena Horne was there, and Eartha Kitt and Nat King Cole and Sammy Davis Jr. That's a large percentage of black performers in a place like Las Vegas all at one time. And yet the rules about our mingling were so stringent that a person of Nat's importance back in those days could not move about freely at all. And I used to wonder why those performers would go to Las Vegas and work and yet be denied a meal in a restaurant or be denied a room in the hotel where they were working, because very often they didn't get a room in that hotel. And I recall one night, because we all had great senses of humor about this restriction, one night Nat said to me, he said, "My God," he said, "if when I leave Las Vegas, I won't know how to act in a normal place because it's been so tough here." And he was right, because it was a very, very difficult place.
When he started performing in Vegas, he was one of the first black performers to go to Vegas. And even though his name was on the marquee and he was pulling in whatever kind of money, he still had to go through the kitchen and he could not stay at the hotel. I'm sure it hurt him very much. It hurt him deeply, and it wasn't really something that he, you know, had a banner flying for.
Singer Natalie Cole. John Collins was the guitarist with Nat King Cole's group in those days.
It wasn't easy. We were restricted to just certain areas in the club. Nat couldn't go in the club, any other club other than where we worked. He couldn't go across the street to the Sahara. They put him out. He went to the Tropicana, they put him out, and we were the stars.
Thank you. This time a very lovely, wonderful oldie called My Kind of Love, Your Kind of Love, keeps me believing, although you're deceiving, my kind of love. One way to paradise.
That star power gradually enabled Nat Cole to change the way business was done. On tours across the country, he quietly sought legal action against hotels and clubs that barred him and members of his group. Partly because of his efforts, black performers in Las Vegas and other cities were able to negotiate better conditions from clubs. Pianist Billy Taylor and Nat's daughter, Carol Cole.
He was the first African-American person to do so many things. He was out there doing things when by himself in Las Vegas and in other places like that. And he made it possible, as did Sammy Davis and several other people, in his own way, for many other musicians and singers to get jobs and to work in a place simply because he was there. He was able to talk to people who made those decisions and convince them on a one-to-one basis that someone else should be considered in that context.
There are a lot of areas that our father ended up being a pioneer, and I don't think his having done things for the first time was necessarily a plan, you know. He wasn't one for a lot of fanfare. I think he just did it.
And he did it by becoming one of the most visible African-American artists in the country, and not just on stage. More on Nat King Cole, the television star, in just a moment. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to Jazz Profiles from NPR, National Public Radio.
My kind of love, one way to paradise. My kind of love, one way to paradise.
May I come and sing to you all the songs that I would like to bring to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Nat King Cole Show, with tonight's special guest, Sammy Davis, Jr. and the Hi-Los.
Nat King Cole had already triumphed with his own radio program in the 1940s. But in 1956, Nat Cole faced a new set of challenges when he took his act to a new medium, television.
Right now, here's one of our favorite songs. It's called Where or When. It seems we stood and talked like this before. We looked at each other in the same way then, but I can't remember where or when.
Bob Henry was a director and producer for the Nat King Cole Show.
There was a talent agency, GAC, General Artists Corporation, who sold the idea of doing a Nat King Cole 15-minute show. And NBC, to their great and everlasting credit, said okay, because this was an era when there were no black artists who had their own shows. I think Billy Daniels and Hazel Scott, if memory serves right, had some programs, but they never really went anyplace. But Nat was the first major black artist to have his own show. But it was all kind of low-key. It's like NBC said, hey, we'll put on Nat King Cole, but we're on eggshells here, so let's go very gently. Let's not make any waves.
The Nat King Cole Show began in November 1956 as a 15-minute program. It soon expanded to a half hour and ran on Tuesday nights until December 1957. It was a variety show, and despite a small production budget, the guest list was an impressive confirmation of Nat Cole's stature in the entertainment business.
We had guests ranging from Peggy Lee, Sammy Davis, Harry Belafonte. It was kind of endless. We had Mel Tormé and Eartha Kitt, etc. Everybody got scale in those days because doing the Nat King Cole Show was like a cause, you know. It was a black artist on television, and the people who respected him as a musician were only too glad to come on the show.
Let's bring on Miss Ella Fitzgerald.
Nat, I'm too tired.
What's the matter, a dance or something?
Oh, there's some fella upstairs and keeps dancing. I just can't sleep.
Wow, I wonder who that could be. Maybe it's Fred Astaire.
I don't know.
He dances overhead on the ceiling near my bed.
When his TV show happened, I'm pretty sure he was, you know, very excited and nervous about it, and it was definitely a big step for him for television. It was a great step for black people, and the fact that he was able to have not only great black performers but white performers as well who went on the show to support him because they totally believed in who he was as a person.
11 years ago.
Well, 11 years ago, more or less, Johnny Mercer and I recorded a tune which music lovers request every time we get together.
That makes three times, including tonight.
One, two, three. Yeah, you're right. Tonight is no exception. This is for music lovers everywhere. Mr. Mercer, let's do it the way we recorded it. You begin,
all
please.
Right.
He was a fabulous showman. His instincts for what would work were wonderful, and that contributed a lot to his career. He didn't just get out there and sing. Between his skill as a musician, pianist, his singing prowess, and his instincts for what would work theatrically, that star was born.
But we'll save the bones for Henry Jones, because Henry don't eat no meat.
Although the Nat King Cole Show was a critical success, its casting of a solo black performer in the starring role seemed to be too much for the times. No national sponsor could be found, and NBC was unable to keep it on the air. Producer Bob Henry, pianist Billy Taylor, and singer Mel Tormé reflect on this sad fact of life in the 1950s.
Nat, in a magazine article in Ebony Magazine, said, "Madison Avenue is afraid of the dark." This has been quoted quite a bit since then. And what it was, the advertising agencies were afraid to go to a sponsor and say, "What do you think of the Nat King Cole show?" They're afraid that the sponsor would, in essence, say, "What? Sponsor a black artist? We'll lose the South." And that's what Nat meant when he said they were afraid of the dark. The South were just as enthusiastic about Nat King Cole as anybody. He's entertaining. He's singing to us. And I guess a lot of the white people in the South didn't feel that he was a particular threat to them.
His lack of acceptance in the television came as quite a surprise to all of us, because he had been very successful on radio. And one thought that he, like many other radio, Perry Como and many other Sinatra, other people who had done radio shows, would just cross over to TV and get his own thing going. And the time, unfortunately, just was, he was just too early.
The radio show was first, and then, of course, he had the TV series. I did both of them. And in both instances, those were groundbreakers. He was sort of the Jackie Robinson of black performers from a standpoint of being first in that kind of context.
In the shadows when I come and sing to you.
I always felt that my father's heart was always in a real jazz idiom. I felt that he was, in a sense, happiest as a musician when he could break away from the microphone and singing that ballad or that up-tempo tune and sit down and jam with the trio or with the orchestra. He used to, even as I remember it, have a moment in his concerts where he would say, "And now for you music lovers," and then he would sit down at the piano and do a medley of tunes that was all instrumental.
"And now a little piano."
King Cole at the piano in concert in 1960. By then, Nat Cole was firmly established as one of the greatest American singers ever. But as Carol Cole remembered, he never lost touch with the jazz roots he cultivated with his trio. In 1956, at the height of his fame, Nat Cole revisited the small group setting and invited four first-rate guest soloists for an extraordinary album called After Midnight. Alto saxophonist Willie Smith, trumpeter Harry Sweets Edison, violinist Duff Smith, and trombonist Juan Tizo joined Nat and his sidemen, bassist Charlie Harris, drummer Lee Young, Lester Young's brother, and guitarist John Collins.
Well, he wanted to play. He wanted to do something, and we had been out on the road a long time. We had been doing one nighters and so on and so on and so on, and he wanted to do something, so he got the idea to get these guys, you know. And we just went in the studio and just started playing, not knowing, I didn't know what we were going to play. And it was a ball.
Just you, just me. Let's find a cozy spot to cuddle and woo. Just us, just we. I've missed an awful lot. My trouble is you. Oh, gee, what are your charms for? What are my arms for? Use your imagination, just you.
just me. Our tired lovers not around wonderful you.
Just You, Just Me. Nat King Cole, piano and vocals, and his trio with alto saxophonist Willie Smith from the After Midnight Sessions. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is Jazz Profiles. One of the highlights of the After Midnight album is Sweet Lorraine with trumpeter Harry Sweets Edison. It was a signature tune that followed Nat throughout his career.
Well, Sweet Lorraine, that really harkens back to his jazz image and his jazz leanings, because Sweet Lorraine, of course, was sort of a jazz icon for an awful lot of musicians in the 30s and the early 40s. And I think that's, bowing to his roots as a jazz artist.
Mel Tormé and Will Friedwald.
In the late 20s, one of the first recordings of Sweet Lorraine was by Earl Hines and Jimmy Noone, and that was Jimmy Noone's theme song for a long, long time. And so that was played much around Chicago, because Jimmy Noone was one of the leading musicians in that town until he died. That's obviously where Cole got it, and he first recorded it for standard transcriptions around 1939 in a version using a vocal trio backing him up, which is very different from the later ones. And then the Decca one from 1941 is a little bit closer to the later version. In fact, it's a lot closer. And finally, in 1943, he put it down definitively in the version we all know.
Although the 1943 version of Sweet Lorraine may be the most familiar one, Cole went on to record it twice more. Listening to these five recordings in sequence, we can appreciate his evolution as a musician and a vocalist.
Now I've just found joy. I'm as happy as a baby boy with another brand new choo-choo toy. When I met my sweet Lorraine, a pair of eyes that are brighter than the summer skies. When you see them, you realize why I love my sweet Lorraine. Now when it's raining, I don't miss the sun, because it's in my baby's smile. Oh, oh. And to think that I'm the lucky one that will lead her down the aisle. Oh, oh. Each night I pray that no one will steal her heart away. I can't wait until that lucky day when I marry sweet Lorraine. It's raining, I don't miss the sun, because it's in my baby's smile. Oh, and to think that I'm the lucky one that will lead her down the aisle. Each night I pray that no one will steal her heart away. I can't wait until that lucky day when I marry sweet Lorraine. Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-da-way-oy.
Nat King Cole, 22 years of Sweet Lorraine, from 1939 to 1961. After all is said and done, when we think of Nat King Cole, we remember a sound. A sound now unforgettable.
I could show the world how to smile. I could be glad all the while. I could change the gray skies to blue if I had you. I could leave the old days behind, leave all my pals, I'd never mind. I could start my life all anew if I had you.
In a short life, but a long musical career, Nat King Cole touched millions. And just as important, he contributed to the development of that uniquely American expression known as jazz. His success can be measured not just in hit songs, but in the way he shaped the fabric of our culture. It's a legacy that is perhaps best expressed for us by some of his friends, family, and fellow musicians.
His aim was not simply to play the piano and be a good jazz musician. He tried to shine a light. There was something about this man that he gave joy. Beyond all of that incredible technical ability and marvelous inventiveness, his message was to be positive and to make everybody happy. And boy, did he do it.
One of the things that I always got was just the huge amount of respect that people had for him. And that meant more to me than anything. The fact that he was talented also was like gravy.
His sense of fairness, his tolerance, but not tolerance to a fault, tolerance where one accepts certain realities but forges ahead to change what needs to be changed.
I could climb the snow-capped mountain, sail the mighty ocean wide. I could cross the burning desert if I had you by my side.
His place in jazz is assured. I mean, he has influenced so many musicians. His influence is permanent as a major jazz innovator.
I enjoyed playing everything with Nat because Nat, he always played the right tempo. He always, he had a innate good feeling, you know. Whatever we did with Nat, when he sat on that piano, it always felt good.
His singing crossed all racial barriers, and it crossed all national barriers as well. There are many of us who've had little talent, who've been given breaks, who've been given chance to shine, and I'm of a generation where I would prefer to say shine for the race. And Nat was handed that chance, and he came through, but brilliantly. He gave us all a sense of pride, a sense of well-being, a sense of optimism, and he took the star role on his shoulders and wore it so beautifully, and that is important.
I just know that from a standpoint of the way he sang, that his singing was, it was just nonpareil. He was literally one of a kind.
I could be a king, dear, uncrowned, humble or poor, rich or renowned. There is nothing I couldn't do if I had you.
Nat King Cole, the jazz singer and artist, was the second in a two-part tribute. It was written and produced by Margaret Howes. We had production help from Rolando Arrieta, Andy Trudeau, and Eugene Holly. Our engineers were Bob Carlson, Leszek Wojciech, and Bill McQuay. Post-production engineers, Andy Rosenberg and John Carrillo. Our thanks go to Jay Ranalucci of Capitol Records, John and Larry Gassman, Ann Douglas of HG Associates, Natalie Cole, and Carol Cole. The Jazz Profile series is produced by Tim Owens, associate producer Madeline Smith, executive producers Mary Beth Kirshner and Murray Horwitz. For more information about this and other programs in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson, saying jazz is as pure as the life we live. So live it. This is NPR, National Public Radio.